Blog Talk Radio.
From the far reaches of the known universe, we are proud to present Brother Harold Muhammad, soldier, scientist, scholar. Blog Talk Radio's finest, not so mad science, on Black Hole Radio. Radio.
Assalamu alaikum, and welcome to tonight's edition of Not So Mad Science here on the Black Hole Radio Network with your host, Brother Harold Muhammad. Once again, and as always, coming to you live from the city of Detroit. Just because Berry Gordy took Motown to L.A. does not mean Detroit has lost its soul. Welcome, one and all. We are coming near to the close of the month of January, the beginning of a new year, 2019. And in that time, in these first 22 days, we've had some exciting things happen and some very not so exciting things happen. But I do want to say something about something that I know you all heard of. Many of you took the time to see. We had what we called a super blood red moon, you know, just the night ago, and something happened, something that is unusual happened. It was reported in New Scientist magazine in an article written by Chris Baranuk, where he took great effort to mention that a meteorite hit the moon during yesterday's total lunar eclipse. As we go on through tonight's program, it'll come to dawn on you why that is so significant. Observers of yesterday's lunar eclipse were blessed with the first known sighting of a meteorite impact during any such event. The so-called super wolf blood moon was eagerly watched by millions of people around the world, many and most via live streaming video. During the eclipse, some people noticed a tiny flash, a brief yellow-white speck popping up on the lunar surface during the online broadcast. Speculation jumped through the woodwork, popped out of people's eyes as to what that might be. One Reddit user raised the possibility that this was a meteorite impact. And others scoured eclipse footage for evidence of the event. A flash is visible in at least three different videos. Jose Marie Madillo at the University of Huelva in Spain confirmed that the impact is genuine. For years, he and his colleagues have been hoping to observe a meteorite impact on the moon during a lunar eclipse. But the brightness of these events can make that very difficult. Lunar meteorite impacts have been filmed before, but not during an eclipse. On this occasion, however, Nagio doubled the number of telescopes trained on different parts of the moon from 4 to 8 in the hope of seeing an impact. He said he had a feeling this time will be the time it will happen. After the eclipse, software automatically pinpointed a flash in imagery recorded by several of his telescopes. This helps to confirm that the flashes seen by the live stream watchers were not just optical anomalies on camera sensors. It was really, really, really happening this time. And when it happened, Madido and his research team were very happy. He notes that the flash was quite bright, and it struck the moon at a moment when the eclipse was not overly luminous itself, perhaps making the strike easier to detect. Although he has not formally calculated an estimated size of the space rock that collided with the moon, Nagio thinks it probably weighed about 2 kilograms and was roughly the size of a football. The combination of a darkened surface and a lot of people watching made it much more likely that the flash of impact was seen. And it reminds us that the solar system is still a very dynamic place and deserves and warrants our active observation. This is Not So Mad Science with your host, Brother Harold Muhammad, here on the Black Hole Radio Network. Why is it significant that we saw such an impact during a super wolf blood moon during an eclipse? Throughout the millennia, eclipses have carried a very prophetic and an ecclesiastical meaning. But this time, this particular eclipse happened when the world was watching. What are we being reminded of? What are we being asked to do? My initial response was, keep your head to the sky. Don't look down. Keep your head up. Look forward. Look high. For there are things taking place that which you must observe in the heavens, that if you don't keep a steady and ready eye, you will miss what's about to take place right before your eyes. We're spending way too much time looking down. The R. Kellys of the world, the Donald Trumps of the world, the evil and sadistic mind that controls this world, that's down. When we need to be looking ahead at what is before us. I am reminded of a book called The Celestine Prophecies, which blows the horn to let the world know that we are in the time of a spiritual reawakening. It's what the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan calls the final call. When the trumpeter comes, keep your head to the sky. lest you miss the message before your eyes. Once again, and as always, this is Not So Mad Science with your host, Brother Harold Muhammad, here on the Black Hole Radio Network. Now that we've dealt with the moon and a recent ecclesiastical lunar event, let us now dive in to the world of science. Over these last few years, there has been a lot of talk about a planet nine. Now, we've always known that there were nine planets in our solar system until some intelligent people decided that they were going to remove Pluto from the planetary bodies that revolve around the sun. Well, in your sadistic logic, you may want to remove Pluto from the list of planets. But any thinking person, any studious person, anyone that focuses in on the details recognizes and accepts that Pluto submits to the laws of nature. It too revolves around the sun in a cyclic, elliptical manner, and can be timed and clocked and found at regular intervals based upon its circuit of the sun. But the binding criterion which makes it a planetary body, it too revolves on its axis, as all the planets in our solar system do, at 1,037 and a third miles per hour, submitting to the law and the will of the governing body in this solar system, the sun. Every planet has a different time interval on its axial rotation, subject to the size of that body. The Earth we live on takes roughly 24 hours to make a complete circuit. Mercury is the fastest because it's the closest to the sun, not really withstanding that it is the smallest of the planetary bodies. So at 1,037 and a third miles per hour, subject to the size of it, of the planet, its day is significantly shorter. It doesn't take 24 hours. Saturn, Uranus, and Neptune, some take extremely long times, up into the years, to make a complete rotation on its axis. But because of its overwhelming size, even at 1,037 and a third miles per hour, it takes a significant amount of time to make a complete rotation on its axis. But over these last few years, there has been much speculation of a mysterious planet hiding beyond Neptune. Well, other theories have come out as to what this so-called Planet Nine might be. So, CNET magazine, which you'll find on the internet, postulated the following in an article by Jackson Ryan. He says, Planet Nine is a long-theorized super-Earth at the edge of the solar system. New research suggests, if not a planet, but a gigantic disk of smaller bodies, asteroids, if you will, out past Neptune. I will submit. Something weird is happening to the orbits of a bunch of space rocks circling the sun. Something the scientists believe that could only be described by the presence of a giant planet, the so-called Planet Nine. However, it has baffled astronomers for years. And now there's yet another candidate for the cosmic wobbliness that's not a planet at all. Planet Nine's existence is largely inferred, meaning it is guessed at. It is postulated. It is theorized. As I made clear over the last 3 weeks, they don't know. And I will offer some ground for this lack of knowledge as we continue. Planet Nine's existence is largely inferred from the unusual orbits of something called trans-Neptunian objects. TNOs exist in the gaping distance and space between Neptune and the rest of the cosmos. Some of these TNOs share unusual, highly elliptical orbits and are clustered in one direction. The suggestion has been that a planet up to four times wider than the Earth is spinning out there in the lonely dark, influencing these trans-Neptunian objects. Astronomically, scientifically, I categorically and holistically disagree. And as I stated, I will offer reasons as to why. New research published this past Monday, appearing in the Astronomical Journal, has put forth an alternate explanation of this strange phenomenon and suggests that the clustered orbits might not be the result of a Planet Nine at all. So a team from the University of Cambridge and the American University of Beirut believe a disk of small icy bodies, rocks, with a combined mass as much as 10 times that of the Earth is responsible for these mystifying orbits. Many of you, dear friends, family, believers, naysayers, detractors, what have you, you have to be asking, Brother Harold, you've been dealing with astronomy, astrophysics quite a bit lately. You got to give a reason why. Bear with me. Just bear with me. The Planet Nine hypothesis is a fascinating one. It's garbage, but it's a fascinating one. But if the hypothesized Planet Nine exists, it has so far avoided detection. Aha. First red flag. Antranic Zelflian, co-author of some new research, said in a statement, and I quote, "We wanted to see whether there could be another less dramatic and perhaps more natural cause for the unusual orbits we see in the TNOs." Many astronomers have been enthralled by the idea that a giant planet might lie outside Neptune, right at the edge of our cosmic neighborhood. It was first hypothesized in 2014 because of its gravitational pull on the distant TNOs. And as more and more of the far-flung objects were discovered, the evidence that their orbits were caused by the super Earth seemed to accumulate. Even deviation in NASA's Cassini spacecraft may have hinted at its existence. But calculating, modeling, and simulating the interaction between the TNOs and a giant icy disk, Selfian and Jahad Tuma, who is also a professor at American University of Beirut, proposed that if a disk of icy debris that exists beyond Neptune is big enough, it too would account for the eccentric orbits of the TNOs previously reported because of its combined gravitational effect. Red flag number two. In both cases, planet or disk, the sad truth is that we can't see either from our spot in the solar system. However, Voyager 1 and Voyager 2 both left this planetary solar system, and neither detected a planet 9 out beyond the orbit of Neptune or Pluto. Yes, the Cassini spacecraft orbit was affected by something. However, the Cassini cameras picked up nothing. So, that means Planet Nine hopefuls need not be down, because Drs. Selfian and Tuma don't rule out that both the gigantic disk or the super planet Earth might exist, but there's no proof that either exists. Though I will submit, it is more likely that there is a culmination of icy rocky bodies in a clustered orbit that is being, or rather causing an effect on the smaller bodies that are near it in their combined gravitational pull. This would not be the first time that an alternative theory had been broached in an environment based totally on conjecture. Back in June of 2018, a group of researchers suggested that the reason for these weird orbits might even be a gang of asteroids hanging out in the far reaches of space, flinging comets at us. All of these things could be, but again, there is no evidence to suggest that it is. So I submit to you, for all of you Planet Nine conspirators, use some common sense. Don't go the way of the flat earthers with your ignominious stupidity. Sit down, pencil to paper. Focus your thoughts. Look at what is, and the basic principle of Occam's razor. In the absence of what isn't, what is what's left over. Planet Nine. We live in a planetary system where there are nine planetary bodies that have already been named. There are nine systems to the human body. God is great. God is good. He can be easily understood if you just look, if you would, of those things that are fully understood. Nine systems in the body, nine planetary bodies in the solar system, all ruled by a head. The sun rules the planets, and your mind rules your body. This is Not So Mad Science with your host, Brother Harold Muhammad, here on the Black Hole Radio Network. We're going to take an extremely brief, as the train comes into the station. This extremely brief interlude will bring us to a musical piece, a very short musical piece, featuring, let's just say, I was thinking Erykah Badu, but that might be a little too dramatic for some of my older listeners. So we're going to go with Carlos Santana and Smooth.
Forget about it.
Not So Mad Science with your host, Brother Harold Muhammad, here on the Black Hole Radio Network. I'm having a little bit of fun tonight, and I'm going to poke a little bit of fun at one of my favorite agencies to poke fun at, because they can be so brilliant and so stupid at the same time. NASA, the National Aeronautical Space Agency. It's not rocket science, but it is. It's not so mad science. And in the world of mad scientists, what are you going to do today, brother? Same thing I always do. Try to take over the world. But in this case, NASA has decided that $3.7 billion. Yeah, $3.7 billion. Is what it would take in a plan that they revealed to calm the Yellowstone supervolcano. The Yellowstone volcano would cause worldwide devastation if it erupted again. And it is believed that it could potentially end life on Earth as we know it. But NASA has a plan to stop that in a bombshell documentary released. Callum Hoare penned an article discussing that very thing. Now, bear in mind, now, when you begin to hear these numbers, I need you to pay very, very, very close attention. And make sure you're sitting in a chair, because if you're not, you're going to fall down laughing. Because I about busted a kidney laughing at this one. Maybe that's how my blood vessel and my eye pop. Because this is really, really far-reaching. The Yellowstone supervolcano has erupted 3 times in history, according to the geological clock and the evidence that today's geologists have found. 2.1 million years ago, 1.2 million years ago, and 640,000 years ago. Scientists have previously revealed, should an earthquake occur, it could take less than 2 weeks before a catastrophic reaction event. However, NASA, oh boy, may have a clever plan to stop the volcano from ever erupting again. Tech Insider magazine revealed during a mini documentary series on their YouTube channel how the space agency worked on a $3.7 billion project to cool the supervolcano. The program was dubbed Defending Human Civilization from Supervolcanic Eruptions. It was started in 2015 at the Jet Propulsion Laboratory in California. Oh, please keep our ear out on this one. Just bear with me. The paper reads, the prospect of attempting to prevent a supervolcano from erupting seems daunting and perhaps impossible. However, it has been suggested that the hydrothermal circulation at Yellowstone may cool the underlying magma and may lead to decreased long-term volcanic hazards. Volcanoes like Yellowstone erupt when molten rock, known as magma, rises to the surface following the Earth's mantle melting due to tectonic plate shifting. Currently, around 60 to 70% of that pressure escapes through hot springs and geysers, but the rest stays in the magma chamber as the pressure increases. NASA's brilliant plan would see them drill a series of wells 6.2 miles deep around the perimeter of the supervolcano. They would then fill these with cold water, which would, over time, cool the rock around the magma chamber. However, the space agency will not be trying this at any time soon. Why? Let's do a little bit of math. The current calculations believe the system would use 20 gigawatts of energy to cool Yellowstone to a safe temperature. Here's where the stupidity comes in at. This water cooling of the Yellowstone supervolcano would take not only more than 16,000 years to do, but it would cost as much as $3.5 billion to do. Now we have to ask a question. In the Trumpian era, NASA, which is federally funded by our tax dollars, paid some geologists and other scientists to sit down and work on this. Who knows how many millions of dollars was used to come up with this dim-witted, far-reaching, overstepping, ignorant-ass idea. Yes, I said it. Ignorant-ass. The cost of $3.5 to $3.7 billion notwithstanding. But you came up with a plan that would require 20 gigawatts of power that takes 16,000 years to do. Why on earth would any suggestive process would we spend our money on such a plan that none of us would ever live to see, when it is predicted that the Yellowstone supervolcano will shift in the next 25 to 50 years. We've already had movement. We've already had movement in the major fault line that runs along the Mississippi River, culminating at the connective point of the Ohio and Colorado rivers, known as the New Madrid Fault Line. That should such a significant shift in the New Madrid Fault Line come, that this great country of ours would be bisected in half with a major waterway then running from the Gulf of Mexico up to the Great Lakes, making a new waterway connecting the Gulf from the Atlantic and the Pacific, coming up through to the North Atlantic. Why? would you pay someone to sit down and come up with such a plan? It makes no cognitive sense to me. But it seems like a significant waste of some of the best minds in America at NASA to come up with a ridiculous plan as that. Yes. And you call me a mad scientist. This is Not So Mad Science with your host, Brother Harold Muhammad, here on the Black Hole Radio Network. Now, I don't mean to make light of this as if the Yellowstone supervolcano does not present a clear and present danger to the people of this country. It does. It does. But we need to be far more creative and pragmatic thinkers than that. And to throw away our tax dollars on something as ridiculous as water cooling system makes absolutely no sense. Why? Because if you pump that much water near that much heat, you have an outgassing of steam, which needs to go somewhere. We've all put a kettle on the stove and boiled the water inside the kettle. When the water reaches a specific temperature inside that kettle and the pressure reaches a temperature significant enough where the water vapor then breaches the whistle cap on the kettle, that gas, that steam, needs to go somewhere. It's going to go up. And if it is not released, what do you have? You have an eruption. What do you think boiling water is? It is an eruption of gas from the bottom to the top. So did you really stop the supervolcano from blowing? Or did you blow something else up? Come on. We got to be better than that. This is Not So Mad Science with your host, Brother Harold Muhammad, here on the Black Hole Radio Network. Now to scientific news that is more relevant to our everyday lives. Greenland. That misnamed body of land up near the Arctic Circle, Greenland, which is actually covered with ice. Greenland's melting ice nears a tipping point, according to scientists, as reported in the New York Times by John Schwartz. Greenland's enormous ice sheet is melting at such an accelerated rate that it may have reached a tipping point and could become a major factor in sea level rise around the world within 2 decades. The Arctic is warming at twice the average rate of the rest of the planet. And the new research adds to the evidence that the ice loss in Greenland, which lies mainly above the Arctic Circle now, is speeding up as warming increases. The authors of a new study found that ice loss in 2012, which was more than 400 billion tons per year, was nearly 4 times the rate in 2003. After a lull in 2013 and 2014. The study is the latest in a series of papers published this month suggesting that scientific estimates of the effect of a warming planet have been, if anything, too conservative. By my understanding, just a week ago, a separate study of ice loss in Antarctica found that the continent is contributing more to rising sea levels than previously thought. Another new analysis suggested that the oceans are warming far faster than earlier estimates. Warming oceans are currently the leading cause of sea level rise, since warm water expands as it warms. Researchers said these findings underscore the need for action to curb emissions of a planet warming gases and avoid the worst effects of climate change. Rising sea levels are one of the clearest consequences of global warming. They are caused both by the thermal expansion of the ocean and by the melting of ice sheets on land. Current projection says that if the planet warms by 2 more degrees Celsius, which is, for those who don't understand Celsius, is about 3.6 degrees Fahrenheit, over pre-industrial times, average sea levels will rise by more than 2 feet. Goodbye, New York City. Goodbye, Florida. Goodbye, Eastern Seaboard. Goodbye, Western Seaboard. Goodbye, Japan. Bye-bye, England, Ireland, and most of the European coast. See you later, Rock of Gibraltar. Just 2 feet. That means 32 to 82 million people will be exposed to coastal flooding. Much of the previous research on Greenland's ice has dealt with the southeast and northeast parts of the island, where large chunks of glacial ice calve into the sea. This new paper focuses on the ice-covered stretches of southwest Greenland, which has few large glaciers and was not generally considered as important as a source of ice loss. Au contraire. But as the earth warms, the paper concludes, the vast plains of southwestern ice will increasingly melt with the meltwater flowing into the ocean. Within 2 decades, it says, the region will become a major contributor to sea level rise. The study, which appears in the Proceedings of the National Academy of Science, used satellite data and ground-based instruments to measure Greenland's ice loss into the 21st century. It looked closely at what seemed to be a pause in the ice loss for about a year, beginning in 2013, that followed a stretch of greatly accelerated melting. The researchers tied the pause in melting to a reversal of the cyclical weather phenomenon known as the North Atlantic Oscillation. A nor'easter, for those who don't understand. Before the pause, the oscillation was in what is known as its negative phase, which is associated with warmer air hitting West Greenland along with less snowfall and more sunlight, all of which contribute to ice loss. When the cycle shifted into a positive phase in 2013, an abrupt slowdown of melting occurred. Yet, the slowdown was anything but good news, according to Michael Bevis. Michael Bevis is the lead author of the paper and a professor at the School of Earth Sciences at Ohio State University. The North Atlantic Oscillation has occurred throughout the historical record. But before the year 2000, overall average temperatures were cool enough that the NAO's positive and negative cycles did not have much effect or much of an effect on the rates of melting in Greenland. Again, that NAO is the North Atlantic Oscillation. It's a weather pattern. Now, the strong effect that the cooler cycle had on the rate of melting, even if it was helpful in stopping ice loss, is a reason for concern. If the warm cycles of the North Atlantic Oscillation are associated with huge losses of ice, and the cool cycles only pause the melting, it suggests a threshold has been breached or reached. As average temperatures rise further, melting will be more sustained and the cooling cycles will have less of an effect in slowing the ice loss. Meaning, if a relatively minor cycle can cause massive ice melting, it means you've reached a point of amazing sensitivity to warmer temperatures, which could represent the tipping point. One degree of warming in the future will have way more impact than one degree of warming in the last century. This new research dovetails with other recent papers on the accelerating melting. Last month, a team of researchers published a paper in Nature magazine that used satellite observations, analysis of ice cores, and models to show that losses from the Greenland ice sheet have reached their fastest rate in at least 350 years. At the other end of the Earth, the speed of Antarctic ice loss is also becoming clearer. Another study published last week, also in the Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences, surveyed four decades of data and found faster ice loss in some regions than scientists had previously estimated. The continent has presented a mixed story in recent years, with researchers measuring substantial losses in some regions, but stability and even gains in others. But the new paper found considerable losses of glacial ice in East Antarctica, previously considered to be relatively stable. As a whole, Antarctica lost about 40 billion tons of ice per year in the 1980s, but it has been losing roughly 250 billion tons per year in the past decade. The new paper adds to a body of recent research showing that Antarctica's ice loss is accelerating, including a study in June of last year that found that the rate of ice loss had tripled since 2007. Scientists estimate the Antarctic melting will contribute 6 inches to sea level rise by the year 2100. Luke D. Trussell, a glaciologist at Rowan University and an author of last month's Nature paper on Greenland, said the new research by Dr. Bevis and his colleagues provides clearer and further illustrations of how sensitive Greenland is now to global warming. What's happening today is well beyond the range of what could be expected naturally. The human fingerprint on Greenland melting today is unequivocal. still most estimates of the tipping point for Greenland ice loss sites higher average temperatures than are currently occurring, more along the lines of 1.5 or 2 degrees Celsius above the pre-industrial levels. Global average temperatures have already increased by 1 degree Celsius or 1.8 degrees Fahrenheit. A co-author of the Nature paper, Dr. Sarah B. Das, a scientist at the Woods Hole Oceanographic Institute, agreed that Dr. Bevis' study reinforced her own team's conclusions and showed how quickly Greenland is disappearing. The common finding, she said, is that climate change has brought Greenland to a state in which a little bit of a nudge is going to have an outsized, now I'll say that again, outsized impact, causing enormous melting. But she also said she takes issue with using the term tipping point to describe the accelerating mass loss in Greenland and that the island is experiencing, because it makes it appear as if we have passed or soon will pass the point of no return. She believes there's reason for hope. Dr. Trussell also agreed that the talk of tipping points could discount human ability to mitigate global warming. We may be able to control how rapidly the ice sheet changes in the future, according to Dr. Trussell, by limiting greenhouse gas emissions, we limit warming, and thus also limit how rapidly and intensely Greenland affects our livelihoods through sea level rise. That, it seems, is our call to make. Well, I beg to differ. We have reached a tipping point because we have a sustained political impact for those that believe global warming is fake news, that we should not invest efforts and time into less environmentally impactful sciences such as electric cars, so to speak, or other means of power generation that do not emit greenhouse gases, which adds to the global warming crisis. Because it's fake news. It promotes a dollar. The continued uses of fossil fuels is good. The continued uses of coal is good. On massive scale burning to produce energy. I'm not talking about the backyard barbecue. Every man, woman, and child in America could have a backyard barbecue and not nearly put out one ace the greenhouse gases that one factory puts out in a day. We're talking about industrial usage of coal to burn. Industrial usage of fossil fuels daily in cars, trucks, diesel engines to burn, when there are alternative means to do the exact same thing. This is not fake news. This is Not So Mad Science. With your host, Brother Harold Muhammad, here on the Black Hole Radio Network. We are now moved into the 30-minute stretch coming near to the close of this edition of Not So Mad Science, but I am committed into getting into some other items before we run out of time, because I do want to close out with a special note that I consider to be very important. So I'm going to get back into the astrophysics of things, because the special note that I'll be closing out on is very significant to us right down to the modern day and time, to the very moment you take your next breath. There was a promise made. There was a prophecy given. And I think it behooves us to know and understand. Our galaxy, the Milky Way galaxy, has what is described as a supermassive black hole at its center. Just recently, Michelle Starr penned an article that says, our galaxy's supermassive black hole could be pointing a relativistic jet right at us. Now, right off the bat, to all my listeners and all my friends listening, you should immediately ask, Brother Harold, brother, you just used a word that don't make no gar-dang sense to me. What the hell does relativistic mean? I'm going to tell you, because that's what I do. The word relativistic in physics means to accurately describe only by the theory of relativity. It also means moving at a velocity such that there is a significant change in its properties, such as its mass, and once again, in accordance with the theory of relativity. So what does it mean in common sense street terminology? It means our galaxy's supermassive black hole could be pointing a potential or a possible jet of energy directly at the Earth. They don't know. Once again, we're coming to these postulates, these theories, these ideas that no one can prove. It's not even observe. It is a guesstimate based on a mathematical calculation that has no basis. So, things are officially getting exciting. The new science has just come in from the collaboration to photograph Sagittarius A, the supermassive black hole at the center of the Milky Way galaxy. Right off the bat, we should know that there's something wrong with that, because there is no visual way to detect a black hole. It can only be accounted for because of the gravitational pull it has on the environment around it, but no one has been able to visibly see it. They know it's there, they just can't see it. So you can, if you can imagine the image of Sagittarius A, and while it may look like a weird blob of light to you, astrophysicists studying the radio data can learn a lot from what they're looking at. And they states, they've identified, again, that relativistic or unknown jet angled toward the Earth. Because the image taken of the region is of the highest resolution yet, twice as high as the previous best, the researchers were able to precisely map the properties of the light around the black hole as scattered by the clouds. The galactic center of the universe, of this, and I shouldn't say universe, but this particular galaxy, is full of matter around this supermassive black hole. And it acts like frosted glass that we have to look through. So, using a very, very long baseline of interferometry, and there goes another one of those words that I think you need to know what that means. Interferometry. Sounds like it should be something really, 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 really important, doesn't it? Well, it really isn't. So let me tell you what it means. It is a device or a means of measure. And this means of measure is, we've all seen how a prism works, correct? Well, in looking through this prism, there is a breakdown of how light looks. Based upon this book of light, we're able to see specific things that we can measure. So, interferometry is a family of techniques in which waves, usually electromagnetic waves, are superimposed, causing the phenomenon of interference in order to extract information. Look at it this way. You know, when you stomp on somebody's foot, they're going to pick their leg up after the foot has been stomped. You know from the action or the motion of looking to stomp that they're going to pick their foot up. They don't want their foot stomped on. So by creating the confusion, you already know, based on the confusion, what the reaction should be. Using light waves, the electromagnetic wavelengths of light can be measured based upon a set of specified principles that are already predetermined. So, using a very long baseline of interferometry, interference measuring, to take observation of a wavelength of 3.5 millimeters or 86 gigahertz of frequency. Now, some of this doesn't mean a whole lot to any of you. What should mean is this: a team of astronomers has used supercomputers modeling to simulate what's inside the thick cloud of plasma, dust, and gas that surround the black hole. It revealed that the Sagittarius A's radio emissions come from a smaller region than previously thought. Most of it is coming from an area just 300 millionths of a degree of the night sky, with a symmetrical shape. And since black holes do not emit detectable radiation on their own, the source is most likely one of two things. One, it may indicate that the radio emission is produced in a disk of infalling gas rather than by a radio jet of gas. Or an exception compared to other radio emitting black holes, the alternative could be that the radio jet is pointing almost directly at the Earth. Why? For something to be pointing specifically at you, there has to be an intelligence function to give it such a direct look. Keep that in mind. Active black holes are surrounded by a swirling cloud of material that's falling into it like water down a drain. As this material is swallowed by the black hole, it emits jets of particles from its rotational poles at velocities approaching light speed. Scientists are not quite sure how this happens, but astronomers believe that material from the inner part of what is known as the acceleration disk is channeled towards and launched from the poles via magnetic field lines. And there goes the crux. Since the Earth is in the galactic plane, having a jet pointed in our direction would mean that the black hole is oriented quite strangely, as if it's lying on its side. In the nearby galaxy Centaurus A, for instance, it has jets pointing perpendicular to the galactic plane. But this orientation has been hinted at before. Last year, the Gravity Collaboration described flares around Sagittarius A consistent with something orbiting it face on from our perspective, looking at it from the solar system from above. So, according to Rabud University astronomer Kino Flake, he says, maybe this is true after all, and we are looking at this black hole, they're calling it a beast now, from a very special vantage point, meaning we're looking right down its throat. Hopefully, when the Event Horizon Telescope releases the first image of Sagittarius A's event horizon, something we are expecting very soon, they will reveal more. And in case you were starting to get worried, the 1.4 millimeter wavelength or 230 gigahertz will reduce the light scattering by a factor of 8. This means the long-awaited picture of the shadow of a black hole will hopefully be in breathtaking detail. Meanwhile, studying data such as these help build a comprehensive picture of how these mysterious cosmic objects work. Now to the crux of things. Why is any of this important to you, to me, to anyone? Why is it important for us to know, not just these scientists to study? the wisest man I ever had the pleasure to see, hear, and sit in front of, taught many of us in these words. He said, "You will know the time because Allah, God, will allow the enemy to get a glimpse, a peek into his power before he removes them from existence." Every day, scientists, astrophysicists, physicists, chemists, biologists, geologists, you name it, what have you, are getting more detailed, climatologists, more investigative, and they're beginning to see things about the nature of the universe that they never knew before. And right at the cusp of them being able to see into the power of God, they will be gone. We are living in a time when we need to step back and self-check and let God do what God does and we work on ourselves. We must give ourselves the reality check. We can no longer continue to go for the okey-doke, the trickery, the same old game that had been played on us for the last 600 years. We cannot continue to walk blindly and not see what's in front of our faces and give hope to an existence that is not ours to have. We can no longer put forth the excuse that I didn't know. We can no longer study the situation. We must do something about the situation. The time for study is over. It is now a time for action. We must take a stand. We must decide to either stand with God or die with the beast. Stand with God or die with the beast. This is Not So Mad Science with your host, Brother Harold Muhammad, here on the Black Hole Radio Network. Once again, and as always, coming to you live from the city of Detroit. So as you ponder some of these words that have been shared today, and I pray that you have learned something about yourself and you gain a new insight into the universe in which you live that would give you pause and a moment to think and reflect. And while you do this, I'd like to share with you in these last few minutes some interesting things. So I'm going to play some music while you think before we close out tonight's program. Because we're crossing the bridge over the troubled water to the peaceful side of life.
Don't trouble the water.
I won't.
Leave it alone. Why don't you let it be? Feel water run deep. Yes, it do.
I know that.
Oh.
If you only believe.
as we begin to close out this edition of Not So Mad Science, I want to remind you one and all that we just shared in the memory of that great, the only real true American that I ever know of, the late Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. In the words of the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan, Dr. Martin Luther King was not a dreamer, but a man evolving toward a common goal for his people. We are to honor his memory, not with long marches and not with speeches, but doing the work for the upliftment and the betterment of black people in America and around the world. He was a man in a struggle for justice. Not injustice, but justice. Not turning the other cheek, but picking up the standard and taking the fight to the streets, to the ears of our young ones who do not yet understand. He was in a war against ignorance. He was a man at peace with his love of himself and his people. But coming next month, we have the blessings and the favor to bring in the greatest weekend of revelry, peaceful coexistence at Savior's Day 2019, the high point of the so-called Black History Month. So February 15th through 17th, Muslims from around the globe and black men and women from around the country will be driving, flying, crawling and walking to Chicago, Illinois to bring in the Savior's Day celebration. Savior's Day, notating the birth of that great one who came here and announced to the world July 4th, 1930, that we were no longer slaves, but we are free and the children of God. Savior's Day 2019. Join us one and all in the culminating lecture on that Sunday, February 17th, at the United Center in Chicago, Illinois, to hear that closing address from the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan. Savior's Day. I pray, Allah, that I'll be there to see you there. And if you're not there, tune in by radio, via the internet, by whatever means you can. Being away does not mean you're apart. We love you, one and all. Baby O, I know you're there. I love you most. Let's make it happen. So, we're closing out this edition of Not So Mad Science here on the Black Hole Radio Network, prayerfully hoping that I have said nothing, done nothing, and shared nothing that would give you distress, but would open your eyes and your ears to the world about you and the world of science. This is Not So Mad Science with your host, Brother Harold Muhammad, here on the Black Hole Radio Network, prayerfully praying that I'm here next week, next Tuesday, from 6:30 to 8 o'clock to share with you the news in the world of science that best befits you or Not So Mad Science. So I close out in the words of that immortal black preacher from the Abyssinian Baptist Church in New York City, the late, great Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. Keep the faith, baby. Keep the faith. Assalamu alaikum.